28th of April, 2015, in the Lucy Coleman Studio in Los Angeles, California, in the United States of America. Welcome to another webcast. For those of you that are in Europe or maybe Canada or other countries that can't hear me, I don't know what to say about that. Maybe I can't go international anymore. So I'm speaking to those of you that's in America. Playing a little song in the background. You're very familiar with it if you ever attended the Protestant or even the Catholic Church. Holy, holy, holy. That was during a time when we gave personal homage to the God that we said that we believed in with all those kinds of words. But now it's superficial blabber. I got to tell you that I've been on the internet taking a very close look at what's been going on around the country and looking at some of the blogs that the people have participated in. And because of what I've seen, I am prompted to speak forth in a way that I think needs to be. I've been waiting a few days. I won't tell you who my source is because it would not interest you. Most of you would not believe the dialogue that I am attempting to tell you about, because in this particular dialogue, I was speaking with a man last night, and he gave me a vivid history lesson. As a matter of fact, after we spoke about an hour and a half over the phone, I thought that the conversation would be a joke, but it really turned out to be very heartwarming and very insightful to myself. And I want to share with you what that was all about. So I'm going to douse the music here, and I'm going to try to give it to you in plain talk, right? He was saying, John, why are you surprised about how those people are reacting? Now, of course, I lived in Los Angeles, and I was in the Army during the 1965 riots that started here under the direction of Chief Parker of Parker Center and the LAPD. I was in the city when that riot broke out and the city burned. I was also in this part of the country when the Rodney King riot took place in the 90s. And the skirmishes that took place, the racial epithets that's been spent back and forth over the years, has so affected us that now the word is, let me get a throat lozenge, because I see what it is. Give me a second. I got this fan on in the studio, and I don't need the fan on. Okay, there we go. Let's get rid of that. And then I'll get back to the microphone once I get a throat lozenge here so that I can stop coughing over the air. That would be better. There it is. I'm sorry for coughing in your ear and all that. I'll put a lozenge in my mouth. But this guy was saying to me, John, you act as if you are naive. He said to me, and he had a very good point. He said, let's look at the way the society has been developed that we've lived in the past 20, 25 years. The governing authorities have taken the raising of our children from us by first of all telling us that we don't have the right to chastise our children. You saw on the news today, if you did, the African-American lady dressed in yellow that was putting a whooping on her boy. Well, that's her constitutional right and her right before God to do that. I didn't see anybody turning her in. I didn't see any liberal, diehard liberals saying arrest her, book her, she hit her son. No, because every parent knows that when a child does wrong, that his ass needs to be whipped. Let's just keep it plain, all right? That's not cursing and swearing. The little stinky, drawled boy needed his butt whipped for what he's doing out there in the street. And that's why his biological mother, with all of the blessings of God, whooped his ass. I'm just keeping it plain like that. Because when you let your children get out of hand, listening to all these crazy laws, you can't whip your children anymore. You can't correct them. They'll turn you into the popo. Now it appears like the Popo is trying to kill your babies. And so you're asking this question, how did that ever take place? How did it ever get this far? How did we get here? Stop being asinine. You know how you got here. You dropped the ball. You refused to play the game that you were supposed to be playing. Everybody had to keep the rules. Now, let's just keep it real, right? Because I know that racism exists. It exists in black people as well as in white people and all people. And you let another people come into your community and start making money, and you not making money, the first thing that you're going to have to do is try to figure out how to stop that advantage. And that's what happened to affirmative action. We can't use it now, because the whites used it towards their benefit. No one is trying to affirm any black man's action now. I saw a couple of pictures over the internet, and it was decisively white policemen, the way that they were looking at the black people that they're supposed to serve. That there was looks of disgrace and hatred on the faces of the people that's supposed to be protecting and serving, when they're really rousting the audience, keeping them on pins and needles. These are the people that live on the lower end of town. These are the people that don't have the fancy jobs, can't talk the queen of the king's proper English, that will not play the game like other people do, because as I was told so richly last night, many of them do not have the intellect to carry themselves to do so. But it shocked me, because when I looked at the children in Baltimore, they were all dressed very well, except for a few people that had to take off their shirt and expose the muscles that they have. Muscles against tanks? Ridiculous. Don't even try to compare this to the Palestinian occupation. This has been going on for years. For years. And since it has been going on for years, this is the result of it. I like what the mayor said. You know what the mayor said? The mayor just says that. The mayor just said, we may not have the money to build this stuff up over again. The mayor of Baltimore. See, and I've been saying that. I said, people are not going to continuously allow you to destroy their infrastructure and keep building it up for you. No, that kind of a welfare system won't work. We need everybody working in the pocket together. Now it's name calling. Don Lemon, the newscaster, having the governor and the mayor walk away from him, he's pressing. Listen, let me explain this to you folk, why massive power wasn't called out to stop that situation from taking place. Simply put, because the powers that be desire it to take place. Let's stop playing games. They desire it. We live in an economy that is gone. What is it, $15 trillion dollars in debt? We'll never get out of debt. The money that we're using, there's nothing behind it. Your president keeps printing money over and over and over, giving it away, and everybody thinks everything is fine and fair, and they're trying to keep everything together. Your children know that it is not. I know, because I teach their age in college. They know what they're confronted with. And it's a simple way to do these things, and when the Republican Party takes over running the country, you're going to see what they do with it. But anyhow, that's neither here nor there. The current situation is one that has been working towards that position for years. Unfortunately, because of this upheaval in the streets, we as an African American community, in my humble estimate, is set back at least 50 years. We keep sliding backwards. We're supposed to go ahead. We spoke about the talented 10th. We spoke about the scholarships, affirmative action, a chance for us to be represented at a very high level. As a matter of fact, I've got to give it to the mayor of Baltimore, one of the most articulate women that I have ever heard. She keeps her cool. She can hold the post with any man. She deserves to be the mayor of Baltimore. Yes, she does. Very smart, brilliant, articulate woman. What Don Lemon did was unconscionable. But what would you expect out of CNN? when you're too stuck on yourself. Like another friend of mine said, see, Don Lemon is stuck on himself because he came out with this gayness and told everybody, I'm gay. And then what he does what a typical gay man does. He boasts and becomes braggadocious about his accomplishments and his achievements when all he should have done was played the role of the reporter. When they answer one question, go to the next one. You don't keep kicking it in their faces. See, this is what gives us a bad name. You're in the position. You're a head anchor. I don't know where Anderson was, but you're a head anchor. And you do the governor of a state and the mayor of a city like that because people are asking questions. Why did their business burn down? Tell the people the truth. It was all planned. It's supposed to make people angry. It's supposed to make good white people angry that they see all of their businesses go up, all their jobs going up. Now they're living in a damn war zone because you dragged your butt and didn't bring the people in to protect the businesses of the community. That was a planned event, people. I don't know why we're walking around with our heads in the sand like we don't know what's going on. But the American people basically have been put to sleep by their big 60-inch television screens and their tons and tons of stations of comedy and sports and other stuff that doesn't mean anything. You're just caught up in the chain of the dialectic and don't even know that you're the freak of the week. And you're asking and asking why. It's not the governor's fault. It's not the mayor's fault. It's the fault of any individual that would see a man and a woman and their children struggling in a ghetto in an inner city like that where there's practically no jobs for the citizens. Oh, I know. One of my students told me today, well, Mr. Coleman, they just won't go to work. Of course they won't. They never saw their father go to work. They see their mother busting her buns going to work. But they've never seen a man get up every day and go to work like me. I'm 71 and I'm still going to work. Every young man that I've helped have seen me work. And the last message that I just sent to a young man, let me see, how did it go? It says, good. I said, I can help you with that project. And then the person says, no, I'm saying, you're working, young brother, and I love it. And the young man said, trying to get it, and thank you for noticing. And then I said, determination. And then he says, yep, you already know. So don't tell me that young black men don't want to work. Because this young black man that I'm speaking to was in prison. And he has a bike. And he rides his bike to the job. And he's going to be, I think, 24. And he's trying to get a new pair of tennis so that he can go with his family and celebrate his 24th birthday. Yeah, see, they're still kind of kids because they've been to now, and he's busy correcting his life. Now, check it out. This young man is a very smart, articulate young man, useful in any community. And so let's face it this way. Why don't we listen to these young people? Because we know that their life is set on a very ruinous path, on a path where they will never get better. They will never get a job. This young man that I'm speaking to on my phone, as I mentioned oftentimes, and I do that because I'm very proud when a young man does something right. I was talking with this young man over the phone, and we were sharing some messages. He was telling me that his birthday is coming up and he's going to go to Las Vegas for the weekend and that he needed a pair of shoes. And that he said, I am trying to work extra jobs so that I can get a pair of shoes. So I told him, well, I got $40 on the pair, whatever you get. I'm not going to buy him the whole pair of shoes because that'll take away his incentive. I just want to motivate him. And then he said, no, I said, yes, it's your birthday, all right, and you got to get some shoes. And he said, I know, that's why I've been working hard. Now, this man did prison time. He was in prison. He told me when I first met him that I did a, you know, a thing. I said, I don't care nothing about that. I'm not even going to ask you what you was in there for. He offered it to me. I didn't care. Because when a person does something like that, he's not a criminal. He's not filthy. He's not ugly. He's not any of that. He's hungry. He's trying to survive. But of course, people like me that are naive, I've always had a job because when I was a young man, the economy was better. I didn't have to cross over some alien border to come over here with my family to have a living. I was born in America. Though a black man, though still enslaved by an institution, my religion was ripped off from me when my people came from the homeland. My culture was ripped off. I was given a Eurocentric culture. I was taught to think like a Brit or to think like a European. I was not taught to think like an African. You can look at me and tell that I am from the continent in some kind of way, but I have absolutely no connection with it. As a matter of fact, I'll say this right now. Whenever I meet African brothers, and I met one recently, and he's a very nice young man, he thinks that it's weird that he's talking with a professor of philosophy. And, see, there's another young man. Young man just texted me and said, cool, I'll be there. See? Now, listen. See, you heard it in real time. I'm not playing with you people out there when I do these webcasts. I only do webcasts for you people that say that you are godly people and love God and want to help people and do things like that. Well, that's what you have to do. Instead of trying to be a critical person analyzing someone else's life, you should try to get involved in that person's life and to help them in their journey in doing life. This is what a person that loves God would do. They're thugs. Of course the mayor is saying that. She has to call them thugs, even though she came from the thug community herself. Because why? She is playing the game of reasonableness. She has to do that. I'm not mad at her. They put the right woman in there as the mayor. She can talk the language. And a lot of blacks would look at her and think that she is against black people. And she is not. She is surviving. She's keeping that paycheck coming in every month. That's what she's going to do. That's why a lot of you won't get up off your duff and do anything, because you're concerned about that paycheck coming in every month. And you know what God's going to do in this country? He's going to cut all the paychecks off. Then I wonder what you're going to be doing. See, what I'm trying to share with you, and it is plain and explicit, that we brought this on ourselves. And since we brought this on ourselves, we ought not be acting as if we don't know what the heck is going on. You know that these cops that work in the inner city, that work in that part of town, are different kind of cops that work out in the residential areas. You would never think in the city of Beverly Hills, a cop walking up to any citizen in Beverly Hills, California, and slamming that citizen down to the ground because somebody said that the citizen just robbed something and walking down the street in a Beverly Hills street right off of the Wilshire Boulevard in Beverly Hills. Wilshire and Roxbury. You think a Beverly Hills cop is just going to go and just grab a guy and slam him down? No, he's going to walk up to him, whether he be black or white, and he's going to say, excuse me, sir, may I have a conversation with you? It was reported that a store was broken into, and you fit the description. And you wouldn't mind if we would question you where you've been. That's the way you expect a Beverly Hills cop to act. You expect them in Beverly Hills to just arbitrarily run up on a citizen shopping on Roxbury Drive and attack him and throw him down to the ground and twist his arms behind his back and break his spine while he hollers for something? That cop would not be working in the city of Beverly Hills another minute. There's too much money there. Too much damn money. And cops are in this city to what? To protect the money. Now, in the part of the city where the underprivileged live. I'm just giving you an education. And don't think that because I was a pastor all those years that I was living high on the hog. I would not accept money that I did not earn. And I never made more than, what is it, $34,000, $35,000 a year when I pastored. Because it was nonsensical. I didn't need that much money to live. Quiet is kept. You can make it off about $15,000 a year. That's all you need. I can break that up. I can break up the food thing right there and then the toiletries. If I just used it for myself, I can make it off of $12,000 a year. That's about what I get from Social Security. I can make it off of that. Transportation, I take public transportation. I don't need no car. I'd get up early enough to show up at that college. But I thank God I have sense enough to have saved a little money or something to have a little transportation. These youngsters can't get a car and pay for the insurance. They cannot pay for their education. They cannot pay for rent for themselves. So therefore, they're going to have to live with their parents for the majority part of their life. And once the parents gets to be about 50 years old, they're going to get tired of the kids. And they're going to have to get rid of them. And they don't know how to get rid of them because all of the males have been feminized. And the females are bodacious around men. So in our community, marriage is over. And since marriage is over, having children is done. Now, if they start killing us or incarcerating us, what do you think the African-American community is going to look like in 40 to 50 years? We will disappear, people. Disappear. And this is a plan to get us to disappear. We've outlived slavery. We've outlived Jim Crow. We've outlived everything. Now, we are supposed to be getting better. But every time the same old Jim Crow tactics is used, why do we fall for it and burn up our own damn neighborhoods? There's something missing there. And we've had all that time since Emancipation Proclamation to get that right. And we are still the tribal Africans that we were when we were on the continent before our brothers sold us to the Europeans. We're just a bunch of individual tribes split up, fussing with each other. When are we going to get it? I put it on one of my blogs on my Facebook. When one brother screams out in pain because a cop is bending him, I'm screaming out in pain. It's called empathy. You can feel what the other person is feeling. You know that the person is hurting. You know it. You know that it is inhumane to hurt a person when he says, "Please stop. I can't breathe. Are you breaking my back? You're crushing my skull. Please stop." I don't care what that person has done unless that person has killed somebody. If that person has killed somebody and maimed another human being, if you have to crack his skull to take him down, take him down. But in this case that I'm talking about, the young man just looked at the cop and turned and started running away. Is that justification for a broken spine? Why aren't the policemen in jail? Why aren't their badges taken, their gun taken, their retirement taken from them? Because they unwittingly, as it was, killed a citizen. They're not given the right to kill citizens. And then other people, the grand jury, is that what they call it? People, if they don't cut out this crap, this whole country is going to go up. And you know what? I know there's 45, maybe 46 million black people in this country, including the indigenous African peoples that are here. Let's say 46, 47 million blacks. Let's do the math. How many whites are there? About 250 million whites. It's not even a contest. And I'm not telling you to chill out because you can't win. I'm saying that we have to discover other ways to breach this failed contract that we've both entered into. And the only way for you to breach that failed contract is to love. What did you think? I was going to give you something hard to do? No, it's easy. When you go downtown and eat the steak dinner and you're in the Ritz-Carlton, and you're eating all that wonderful food and drinking that $1,500 bottle of wine. And when you're eating the best of food, the steak melts in your mouth. Your woman has on her fur coat. You dressed in the latest styles and fashions, Yves Saint Laurent, Calvin Klein. You got on the latest rimmed eyeglasses or sunglasses. You got diamonds and gold hanging off your behind. And you in there. Now, I want you to shift from that table in Beverly Hills and go right over here on the east side of Los Angeles. All right? Let me give you a street. How about Grand Avenue and 25th Street, 25th and Grand? Go down there. The only restaurant you may see down there will be a Jack in the Box or something like that. Because people in that part of town they can't go out on the west side and have a nice $300 meal. They're too busy worrying how they're going to pay the rent or keep the 4 or 5 cell phones on so they can keep in contact with their families. Have you ever seen them on the bus walking with their children? You ever see how old their mothers get overnight? I watched my sister grow old like that. She raised 2 children by herself because her man ran out on her. And I watched my sister grow into an old, wrinkled woman. I didn't blame her. But I watched it. I recognized it. I want you people to open up your eyes. And I know how it is. When you reach a certain point in life, meaning you got yours. Okay, you got your degree, you got your money, you got your house, you got your car, you got all that stuff, don't you? See, you have yours. And now you're not concerned about anybody else because you got yours. I said, that's why this country is in this shape that it's in today. Because it used to be a nation when somebody came alongside of you that was far less misfortunate than you were, you automatically helped that person. You had an affinity to help that person. Now what you're doing is you're saying, if you're white, you're saying, look at those black animals. No. Come and live in the inner city. Come and live there. Those human beings can't get a job. And then you would say, well, maybe if they would stop gangbanging. Wait a minute. Here's another young man. Another young man commented on what I said on Facebook about what we've done, and he just wrote me and said, we are done as a people, PJ. That's what a black man just told me over my phone. Because I was trying to tell the numbskulls on Facebook to stop arguing about this thing and to look at the situation and to see what brought it there. And here's a black man wrote me and said, we are done as a people, PJ. Now, when somebody tells you that your national people, if I was Hispanic, I would be shocked if somebody told me that all the Hispanics are done. No, because see, the Hispanics are multiplying. They're having babies. They believe in families, homes, keeping things together. I have many Hispanic neighbors around me. The whole neighborhood has changed. It's a wonderful thing to see progress. Do I see it in the African-American community? Why? You can't get the average black man to stay with a black woman. The black woman treats that bad. And none of us are perfect. None of us are perfect. That's all I'm trying to get you to see. But when you see the way other people treat each other, and then you compare that to the dehumanizing, what can I call it? The dehumanizing character in which we correspond with one another. I was talking with another friend of mine, and we were asking the question. This is the question that we were asking. Why is it a fact? Why is it so that we have in our community now so many young men that are more friendlier with their fellows than with the girls. It's like they hate the women and the women hate the men. Now, this gap, this didn't happen by mistake. It didn't happen by mistake. Now, let me just give you a simple way about how it happened. Let's go to the jail system. You got a black man caught with, I don't know what the law says. How many grams of marijuana? Kush? Are you kidding me? He got a handful of kush on him. He's going to get 5 years in prison for having a handful of kush. All right. And it's illegal. Before, the white man really brought these green clinics in here and put them all around in our city, just like the white man back in the 80s dumped dope in our community, this crack cocaine and everything else. So I think what we need to do is we need to stop playing these games and own up to the fact that you know what made the society the way it is today. And so since you know that the society is that way, stop pretending like it's not. The dope was put in our community. That messed up these kids' parents. All right? There was something, an article came out, somebody put it on Facebook. The Bloods and the Crips in Baltimore, Maryland, were singing, "We are soldiers of the cross and we have to fight, although we have to die." And of course, they were using that song talking about killing the cops before they kill him. That's where a young man would speak. Well, one of my brothers, a very fine man, I have great respect for him, was telling on his thing that how could these hooligans, these fools that had depraved all together, use that Christian song? And I had to write on the blog and say, because they're afraid, they're frightened, and they were singing a song that they remember their grandmother sung in church. Because when they were kids and went to church and saw the grandmother and her husband and Uncle Bob and all of them singing, "We are soldiers in the army. We have to fight, although we have to die. We have to hold up the bloodstained banner. We're gonna hold it up till we die." That's what those brothers were singing. And another black man, who is a Christian, a professing Christian, criticized them severely because they were singing that song. I understood the significance of that song because I sung it when I meant it. They mean it. That's as close as they can get to God. They were ripped out of the world where their God was given to them. They were given this, and that's why I tell people Jesus was not white, blue-eyed, blonde hair. That's a lie. That is a lie. And anybody that believes that is a cotton-picking liar. Jesus looked like an Iraqi, man. He didn't look like no European sitting up there with his skin all pale. And come on, man, stop. But that's not important anyhow. That's why those boys were singing that song. And if another person from that community doesn't understand what they're saying, we need to slow the hell down and pay attention to our young brothers. I know they do poorly. So did some of these white boys, too, in the Klan. They do poorly, too. But sure enough, if they get you, they'll skin you alive. I don't see nobody talking about that. I'm going to tell you, my white brothers, they are armed and dangerous. They are not, and I'm going to put emphasis on this, they are not going to let 45 or 46 million people take their country from them, 245 million. They are not. If any of you think that's going to take place, it's not. The mayor's going to be talking like the mayor's talking because the mayor wants to survive. She knows it. A lot of people think the mayor of Baltimore is an Uncle Tom. You out of your mind. That woman has learned how to survive in the nation that she lives in, just like I've learned how to. My supervisors are white, Anglo-Saxons. You don't see me always talking about them. I ask if there's anything else I can do for them. I'm not a slave in that manner, but I know I want to keep my damn job. See, let us stop being naive about this. Talking about, we got a black president, now we can do... No, you can't. You will only be allowed to do certain things. Everyone will be. I will only be allowed to do certain things. I will only be allowed to say certain things. Because the powers that be will cut me off in a minute. So my suggestion is that everybody just pick up a book and read it and try to listen to a little classical music. And when you're out in the street, try to reach out and touch somebody, all right? Help these young men. They're trying to get a job. I got an ad from the school today. They were putting it on people's cars all on the parking lot. Jobs for college students, and had about two or three phone numbers on there. I'm going to give some of these young men this and say, call this number. They have instant money out there that you can make some money, put some change in your pocket. You know, help them out. They'll do it. Because when a man gets hungry, he only has two options, and then I'm finished. When a man gets hungry, he only has two options: to work decently, to provide the money for the food for himself and his family. Three options, really. Or to ask someone to give him some food because he doesn't have anything to get any food. Or to take it. Because he's not going to starve to death. He's not going to do it. He's a homo sapien. He's a human being. He deserves the right to live. Well, anyhow, I've spoken enough. I hope that this is enough to carry you through these terrible times that we're going through. The unfortunate thing is that this is going to hurt the Baltimore economy, and unless some rich 1%er comes forth after he, listen to this, listens to my webcast and has a bleeding heart, to say, I'll rebuild up the whole city and I'll provide jobs for everyone there in this country. But you have to live in Baltimore City. And you have to work for the rebuilding of the city. I'll provide the jobs. These are not my slaves. These are my fellow citizens. Let's train them to get on the cases of the black school teachers and educators that was swindling the poor black children out of a decent education for years. Tap into that. Some of those elitists living in those nice houses, getting those paychecks and everything. That's why the judge threw their butts in jail immediately. He was outraged. Become outraged, people. Don't get mad at the babies. The babies are only acting out what we gave them to act out. And they'll tell you that. What you trying to correct me for? Look at what you did. And wasn't it a shame? They had, what's that guy's name? Bryant, that preacher from First AME? They had him out there. I remember when that man was whoring in Los Angeles with other men's wives. And they got him at the head of the committee in Baltimore? I'm just being real with it. They thought some mess was going to blow up in Los Angeles, and they had Mark Ridley Thomas and these other pimp preachers all up on the steps of the city hall calling for comp. Why do they always go to these puppets that's playing church to keep the slaves in order so the plantation won't get out of hand? You get it yet? Do you get it? I remember there was a famous statement that Mayor Tom Bradley said when it started out after the Rodney King thing. They were meeting down at First AME. And, you know, people started hearing the ambulance and boom, gunshots and everything going off. You had city councilmen and all these people that live on the west side in the valley. All of them was out there. And I think the mayor said, well, I think it's time for us now to go home while we can still make the drive safely. Because, you know, they drove their big expensive cars to First AME Church. But then when they saw smoke coming up and the glare of fire burning in the windows, they said, well, I think it's time for us to go home. Oh, yes. See? That's the way that works. Oh, the Lucy Coleman studio is blooming with beautiful little kids running all around on my front lawn. It's wonderful. Ah, yes. They even had the little boy. They all love to climb up on the porch and just jump off the porch and run in circles. That's okay. They're my neighbor's kids. I'm not going to say, get off that porch, you dirty little kids. What would you say? Oh, and they're Hispanic. See? They're my neighbors. I dig it. I have learned how to survive in this thing called the city of Los Angeles. I've learned how to survive in an ethnic community that gives me the challenge to love my neighbor as myself. And that's how this problem is going to be solved. And if you can't or will not do that, then you do not have the right nor the privilege to complain, because you know how to solve it, but you just refuse to do it. All right, I'm gone. It's recess time out in front of my house. I may have to supervise. I have some lovely lilies out there. This is Pastor John in the Lucy Coleman Studio saying thank you for coming by, visiting me. And whatever you do, you know the drill. Stay into the Word of God. It'll show you how to love.